Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the greatest podcast show on earth.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad you're listening. Oh, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Gunky, and you're listening to Slapstick Conversations on Clowning. And unfortunately, my co-host seems to have what, the cat got your tongue. What's going on? You're not saying hello?
Hello, I'm here too.
That's Jazzy. Hi, Jazz.
How are you doing, Gunky?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you either your microphone was muted or you just weren't talking. I'm not sure which.
I'm always in awe of you.
Well, I'm in awe of you too. So anyway, we're glad you're listening today. We have a special show for you. It's actually a two-part show. We're going to highlight a gentleman who is really very talented. In fact, his name is Mr. Puppet. He also goes by his original name, which is
Bob Abdu.
And he's going to be a headliner at the World Clown Association Convention coming up.
It is March 7th through the 11th of 2022.
All right. So if you're listening and it's 2023, unfortunately, you missed the convention. But we still have our interview with Mr. Puppet, Bob Abdu, right here for you to listen to. Can you say hello to our audience, Bob?
Hola.
Hola. All right. Well,
that's all I know. Wait, tengo mucho hambre. I am hungry. No. Hello, everybody in podcast land. Is it radio land or podcast land?
We'll just go podcast land.
Sure. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for joining.
Jazzy, would you give the man a sandwich? He said he's hungry.
That's right. Here you go.
Can you make me a rubber band sandwich and make it snappy?
Okay. Right?
Is this what we're in for over the next several minutes?
Yeah, don't get me started.
For those of you who don't know, he's a wonderful and masterful man of comedy, and he chooses to outlet that comedy in puppetry. Is that correct, Bob? Would that sum up your...
Nope, that's it. I'm not a magician. I'm not a clown. I don't juggle. I don't face paint. I don't do balloons. You know, I learned years ago that I do one thing and I do it well. And what I don't do well, I just don't do. You know, this is my 25th year. The beginning of 2022, I will be doing my 7,000th show.
Oh my goodness.
I've kept the record of every show I've ever done.
Can you tell us kind of how you started? What made you choose puppets?
Okay, well, you know, that's a great question. I'll tell you how I became Mr. Puppet. And it's a sad story, but it got me to where I am today. I live in Hilton Head, South Carolina.
That doesn't sound like a sad story.
Bob. No. It's a happy ending, maybe.
It does. It's a happy ending. Well, I was in the printing business in Atlanta. In 1986, I started my printing company. It was very successful. Atlanta was a great city, which I still love. Every year, my business grew and grew and grew. In fact, printing brought me a lot of money. In fact, I tell people I didn't count my money, I waited. The problem was I was 30 years old, 35 years old in that general area, and I was working 8 days a week. The shop never closed. So if there was a problem at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to be there, because not only did I do the paperwork and the sales, but I also helped with the printing presses.
Wait, before you go too far, I just want to interject. Do you know the name A.B. Dick?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
I used to work for A.B. Dick. A.B. Dick. A.B.
Really?
Dick Company. Yeah.
360.
My father used to work for A.B. Dick.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. This is like 3 degrees of Kevin.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I interrupted, but
no.
I figured
A.B.
printing.
Dick presses. That's a great trivia. Oh, that, look at that. Now we're all connected. But what was happening was I was young, and I don't want to say I was going to have a nervous breakdown, but I was working myself to death. I was making a lot of money, but I never spent it because I was always working.
Right. I didn't have time.
So someone said to me I needed to get a hobby. And the only thing I remember as a hobby as a kid was a puppet, a ventriloquist dummy. And you can say the word dummy. It's not being politically incorrect. 100 years ago, the word dummy meant mannequin. So, in fact, the ventriloquist is actually the dummy in the act. So when I say ventriloquist dummy, I'm talking more about the wooden characters, not like a soft puppet like Kermit the Frog or Elmo, talking like Charlie McCarthy and stuff like that. So I remember I had a ventriloquist dummy as a kid. So I called up a puppet company in Colorado, Mayer Studios. His name was Clinton Detweiler. For those of you know who knew Clinton, he later became my adopted dad. He was my mentor and I listened to every word he ever told me. And what was great about Clinton was that he was like my therapist. I had four mentors in the puppet business. So I told him that I wanted a puppet of me as a kid. I said, cost is no factor. Just make me a puppet. I don't care how much it costs. Well, a couple of weeks later, I get this box in the mail. This is a true story, so help me. I say it true today as I did in 1991. I opened up this box and light from heaven came out. And I heard angels sing, oh. I couldn't believe what I saw. It was a dummy in there, and I was almost scared to touch it. I never saw a dummy before in real life. You see him on TV. I still have it. His name is Woody, which is a typical ventriloquist dummy name. I still have Woody. So I took him out, and I go, wow, this is awesome. So what I did was I took him on my sales call to my clients. And I started making people laugh. And I realized, and this is true, I truly believe this today, that if you can make a client laugh, you can make them buy. So what happened was my clients were giving me more work. And I didn't want more work because I was already working myself to death. So I realized I had to separate my life from puppets and printing. I couldn't do them together anymore because I couldn't handle any more work. So what happened was, living in Atlanta, there was a museum there called the Center for Puppetry Arts. And I, you know what, I'm gonna take every Saturday morning off and bring Woody with me to the center and perform. You know, you think that I'm gonna walk in the door and they're gonna hire me. This is true. So I'm not trying to be disrespectful in words, but when I walked in there, I said, I wanna work here. And they said, we don't know what to do with you. I go, we can't pay you. I go, you don't have to pay me. I go, I'll pay you to work here, for me to work here. That's how much I wanted to do this. So they kind of like brushed me off. They said, well, just go outside and greet the people at the doors. They literally did not know what to do with me. They called me a docent. I didn't know what a docent, I actually thought they called me a douchebag. That's a true story. I go, who are you? What did you just call me? And I realized the docent basically means free labor. You know, you work at a museum. So I became a docent. And what happened was I was like the greeter at Walmart at the Center for Puppetry Arts. And every Saturday, I would just greet the children as they walked into the museum. They have to remember, I knew nothing about comedy, nothing about dummies, nothing about structure, absolutely nothing. But every Saturday, children would talk to me and I built my persona from the way children were dealing with me. And that's where I got my shtick from. So it's basically street learning is where I learned it. And one Saturday I didn't work at the center, and a boy went to the front counter and said, hey, where's Mr. Puppet? And they said, he's not working this week. So the week later I went to the work at the Center for Puppetry Arts, and they said, hey, this little boy called you Mr. Puppet. And I go, Mr. Puppet? Hey, that's my new name.
That is so
that's
cool.
A really cool story. We love to ask the origins of names.
I've actually had other puppeteers and ventriloquists actually tell me to my face they dislike me because I call myself Mr. Puppet, because they think the word Mr. Puppet means that I know it all. And I said to them, you know, I grew up in Atlanta, and in Atlanta, there is still a respect for people. We would say yes, ma'am, and no, sir. So calling somebody Mr., you're not putting them on a pedestal. It's just a form of respect. This little boy just called me Mr. Puppet out of respect. I'm still learning, but I do know a lot. So when I say the name Mr. Puppet, it's not that I know more than other people. It's just that it's just a name, like Mr. Taco or Mr. Brakes or Mr. Tire.
Right.
My name is Mr. Puppet only because this little boy called me Mr. Puppet.
Yeah, and I don't think you need to defend that, Bob. I'm like, so that was God-given name by this child.
It was a gift.
And yeah, it was the biggest gift. And this is your name that stuck in your whole career.
But have they seen your show, those people who you aren't their cup of tea? Because it's really funny.
Have they seen my show? No. One of the three things that I've learned about being successful is that you have to read the room, you have to know your audience, and you have to love your audience. You have to do all three. If you try and do two out of the three, you're going to get 99% success rate. One thing great about what I love with my business is that I don't do the same show for different audiences. I can actually do 20 to 30 to 50 different types of shows. If I do a show for a Jewish community, for the Amish, you know, for Christmas, for Hanukkah, for Easter, for Halloween, for summer, stuff like that, I create a show around my audience. So I'm not doing the same show for different audiences. I tell people my show, you know, for the older crowd, I tell people my show is like the Ed Sullivan Show. So one act, you might see a polar bear riding a unicycle, and the next act, you'll see a opera singer from Russia, just like you would see on Ed Sullivan. Mm-hmm. For the new generation, I tell people my show is like watching America's Got Talent, but without the judges.
Who said this wouldn't be entertaining?
Bob, I want to know what kind of puppetry you use, because I know you use, you know, marionettes, dummies.
I use dummies mostly for my older crowd, for the seniors and adults, only because when I do shows for children, every one of my ventriloquist dummies has their own suitcase. So I bring so much equipment, bringing one more suitcase is just exhausting. So it's easier for me to bring soft puppets to a children or a family show. I bring like four or five suitcases with me, and it takes me almost sometimes an hour to set up my show. I actually have a stage that I build up, because when a crowd comes in and they watch, I want them to go ooh or ah. I want them to know that something's magical is gonna happen. I don't want them to see empty boxes behind me or a chalkboard or a window. I cover all that stuff up. I want no distractions.
Exactly. All that noise you don't want them to focus on.
You want to win. And when I say win, I don't mean to say somebody else loses. You're in competition with yourself. I want compliments. I don't want complaints. But my job as a ventriloquist is that I have to trick my audience's mind to believe that my puppets are real. And once I do that, they are fixated to realize that they are now seeing two live characters on stage. It's not about lip control, because it goes beyond lip control. Lip control does help out, and as ventriloquists, we do try and keep a stiff lip, but there's other factors besides lip control. I've been going to the ventriloquist convention for many years. Nobody ever talks about facial expression.
Like, even in our world of clowning, you can be the best dressed clown. You can have perfect makeup, but you might not really know how to clown. You're not making people laugh. You're not knowing your audience, like you said. You're not getting to what's going to make them laugh and smile and be endeared to you. And you don't need to be the best dressed or have the best makeup, or sometimes all that fancy stuff that a lot of people focus on is just kind of the fluff and not the real meat of what it is in your heart.
Yeah, the window dressing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I personally believe that. In fact, I personally believe that it's not the puppet, it's actually the material. You have to capture their attention. In fact, this is the illustration that I give to my audiences, is that if there's two TVs on and I shut there's a magician on one TV and there's a ventriloquist on the other TV, and I shut the volume off, who are you gonna watch? You're gonna watch the magician, because the magician moves around a lot. He's got scarves he's thrown in the air. He's pulling flowers out of his sleeve. A ventriloquist just stands there. It's all verbal, and your ears are your weakest sense. You ever been on a street corner and you hear a fire engine? What's the first thing you do? You look down the street left and right, because you don't know where that sound's coming from. Until your eyes see the flashing lights, your ears don't know where that sound's coming from. Your ears are your weakest sense. So I have to trick your ears into believing that my puppets are real. If there's any advice I would tell people is always have a joke in your pocket, always. And it's the same joke. You don't have to, if you're doing table-to-table entertainment at a restaurant, you can tell the same joke. No, nobody's going to complain that you're telling the same joke across the room because you're only talking to each table. In fact, I'm going to tell you about one ventriloquist. His health is really poor. His name is Nacho Estrada. And Nacho was a performer in Texas. And I went to go see one of his school shows. And he was just doing his regular show. But every like 5 to 10 minutes, he would say to the children, "You are loved. You are special." He would just say affirmations to these children. And I thought to myself, it's kind of lame or kind of cheesy. I didn't understand what he was actually doing until about 6 years ago. And I realized he was doing that so children can feel special, can feel loved. It wasn't about the laughs. It wasn't about having your audience leave, you know, with belly aches. Having your audience leave feeling good about themselves. Because once you have your audience feel good about themselves, they will remember you for life. I just came back from a county fair in Ohio, and there was a girl, her name was Bella. I'll never forget this. I met Bella 2 years ago. So she was looking forward to seeing me again. And one of my main puppets, his name is Stinky the Possum. He drew a picture of Stinky and gave it to me as a gift. And I said to the grandparents who are taking care of Bella, "That's very nice. Is she okay?" She said that she has good days and bad days. I go, "Why, is she having problems?" She goes, "Well, her parents were drug parents. She was born with opium and marijuana in her system." It just broke my heart. And I go, you know what? Bella is like the poster child now for what's going on with the children in the world today. We have to take care of these children. You know, the days of bringing up a volunteer on stage, let's not make them the butt of our jokes. Let's make them feel special.
Do you feel like as you're getting older and more mature and you see life in a different way, if that reflects in your performances, maybe you're taking on a little more of a Mr. Rogers kind of role?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. You know what I started doing a couple of years ago? We were taught by the book, and I realized about 6 to 7 years ago that you can't learn by the book. You got to learn by the heart. We were taught that you should make a grand entrance. Your introduction, oh, he performed in Japan and Hawaii and the ventriloquist can blah, 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 blah. Please clap your hands and make, I mean, they're almost like making you into a god. And I just felt uncomfortable because the spotlight was on me. And I realized to be successful, you have to turn the spotlight on the audience. That's what makes you successful. So what I started doing about 6 years ago is instead of coming out from behind the back curtain, I sit in the audience or I'll sit on stage and I will chit chat with everybody. What it does is it breaks the ice. We just talk about I actually ask the same questions. What's your favorite food? What's your favorite candy? Just very generic questions. But what it does is it makes me care about the people in the audience. It makes them realize that I'm listening to them, that I'm not just some big superstar and they're here to watch me. I actually care about them. And I have to tell you something, it's made a world of difference because two things, they feel a personal connection with me. The children feel safe. They know I'm an okay guy. And another thing is if I remember their names, that's another thing in almost all my shows, I try and remember every child's name. So my puppet might say their name. And then all of a sudden that child like, whoa, oh my goodness. That puppet just said my name. How did he know who I am? I'm telling you, it makes them feel great.
I want to interject here because I actually saw that in action when we were doing the parade at the Red Skelton Festival. You were right behind me in the parade route, and I heard you ask parents, "What's the child's name?"
Yeah.
And then you started interacting with the marionette that you were carrying down the parade route. And I thought that was really cool. You were making that connection. You're in a parade route with people on both sides of the street, but you're making an individual connection with each child as you move along the route. I think that was incredible.
You know what? That child went to bed with a smile on their face, knowing that somebody cared for them.
Bob, when you reflect on your shows, are you reflecting? Do you tape your shows and go back and watch yourself? Do you, from memory, or is just feedback that you get from the audience?
You know, because, you know, when you do so many shows, I've almost averaged 300 shows a year for the last 25 years. I have worked myself to death. So I don't really I do videotape certain shows. Mm-hmm. You know what? We live in a world now today that I don't mind people taking out their phones. Let them videotape me. Put me on YouTube.
Right.
You know, when cell phones came out, entertainers, they hated people taking out their phones because we didn't know the etiquette back then. But people now use their phone. Oh, if they want to videotape my show, go ahead. You know, what are they going to do? Watch it once and never watch it again? They're not stealing my act. And if they, you know, and I actually had a, actually told the performer that if he steals my act, I'll steal three of his. So.
And now here's something we hope you'll really like.
And you briefly touched on some mentors that you had earlier in your career. You said you had three or four?
Yeah, I had four of them. I had Clinton Detweiler. He was the owner of Mayer Studio. He was my therapist. I had Bill Boley, who was a giver. In fact, Bill Boley was such a nice guy. And you have to remember, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, he would put his act on videotape and sell his act. And back then, you didn't do that. Well, that's how he made his money. Bill Boley was a giver. So Bill, you see these names now in the ventriloquist world, and these men are revered. And then there's Johnny Main, who's from Buffalo, New York. Johnny Main was very strict. He was very strict. He would be the one getting on the phone telling me, stop doing this joke, stop doing this, you know, manipulate your puppet this way. But he was, you know what, if he had a ruler in his hand, he would have smacked me with it. And then there's Bob Isaacson, who passed away a few years ago. He was like all these men were like my adopted dad. I would just call him up and just go over certain routines, and all of them clapped for my success. Now, these are all men in the ventriloquist world. And then there's Fred Cowan, who was my adopted dad in the marionette world. And he taught me and helped me show me how to build and perform marionettes. People love marionettes. I actually open up almost every one of my shows with a marionette act, because ventriloquism is all verbal. And again, remember, your ears are your weakest sense. But when people see a marionette act, it's very revered. They actually sit down and shut up. You know, in vaudeville, I'm an old vaudevillian. And in vaudeville, the first act was called a table setter or a flash act. It would be cannons and fireworks and just loud. And what it put people in their seats so they can watch the second act. So the first act was more of a throwaway. But what it did was it told the audience to sit down and shut up because the show's about to begin. And my marionettes do that. And what it does is it literally shuts my audiences up. They go, ooh, ah. And they just love the, and they see me perform. It's like I'm like playing a violin in front of them. They see me pulling the strings and they're just fixated on the marionette because they're very elegant. It's very European. People in America are still adore marionettes because you very rarely see them done anymore.
How did you teach yourself to manipulate or control the marionettes?
I hung out with a lot of marionette performers that wanted to share their success with me. They were ready to pass the torch to me. There are a lot of other marionette performers that, you know, could tell me to go take a hike, you know, take a long walk off of a short pier. But then there are other ones that really care. And so I've been really blessed to have people that really cared about me. So, you know, when it comes down to my shows now, not only do I care about my audience and care about the children and whoever's watching, but I also envision Clinton Detweiler, Bill Boley, Johnny Main, Bob Isaacson, and Fred Cowan. I imagine them in my audience watching me. They want them to feel proud that I'm doing a good job.
So you said you build your own marionettes?
Yes, I build one marionette a year. What I do is I have about 75 professional marionettes. These aren't like little toy bought, you know, little puppets that don't manipulate well. I buy marionettes from retired marionette performers, maybe they have died and their family doesn't know what to do with it. They call me up, I find them on eBay, I find them in antique stores or in auctions. So I find puppets, I've bought some puppets that have been in storage for 30 years and they're old and dirty. And one of the things that I love is I rebuild them. I give them to life again.
Okay.
I get their strings. I get them better fur or fabric. I give them better controls. I mean, I have done some refurbishing on puppets that you wouldn't even realize what the original looked like. I have a friend of mine that sews puppets for me. She's a clown in Hatboro, Pennsylvania. Her name is Stitches. Her name is Mona Schmidt. So she does all my sewing for me. So anytime I need puppet clothes done, I send it to her and she sews them for me, and she does a wonderful job. So that the only, I don't sew, so that's the only thing she does for me. But everything else I do.
Is that kind of what you did with the Red Skelton marionette that was at the parade?
Yes. In fact, at the Red Skelton marionette, I bought that from Rick Morse, who's another great marionette performer who now lives in Florida. He had a Bob Brown marionette. Bob Brown is also another professional, really great performer. I think he's retired now, who lives in Washington, D.C. But it was just the body. It was had no face, no clothes, no nothing. It was just a white head, a white body, shoes, and gloves. So I bought it from Rick, and I said, I got to do something with this. So I met, I knew another clown who did great artwork. His name is Nicholas Cottrell from Cincinnati. I sent it to him, and his clown name is...
Is it Scraps?
Scraps, yes. Great guy. He's a hobo clown. So I asked him if he could paint a clown face on this bear marionette. And he did, and it was like a Picasso. When he sent it back to me, I go, my goodness, it's too good. And it actually looked like Red Skelton's hobo character. So I sent it to Stitches. She made all the clothes. I found the hat, and I did some other things to it because every marionette act has an element of surprise. And what that means is that a marionette act usually lasts about 2 to 5 minutes. The problem with a marionette act is that there's a lull. There's a little bore in it where the audience might realize that the puppets aren't real. But every puppet that I do has an element of surprise. So just when I think my audience is going to lose interest, he'll tip his hat up and there's a fishbowl on his head. And that gets them laughing. And then that gets them back on track to watch me again. Or the same marionette has a squirting flower. So when I did the parade, you know, he squirted the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Think of a squirting flower on a marionette. That marionette, by the way, now resides at the Red Skelton Theater in Pigeon Forge.
Oh, with Brian Red Skelton Hoffman?
Right, Hoffman. He wanted it, and I wanted him to have it. So Brian and I worked out a deal, and it now hangs in his theater. And he hangs it proudly, and I'm really proud that he had it.
So do you limit the marionettes to the beginning of your show? You said you always do them at the beginning. Do you have another marionette that comes later?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, there's a couple of marionettes that I use for the ending. I think you might have saw it, Chili Dog. He plays plays the trumpet. I love doing Chili Dog. And so he's actually, again, in vaudeville, the second to the last act is called the bald spot, because people would get up and leave in vaudeville. So the performer would see the bald spot performer. Whenever I'm performing Chili Dog, he's always the second to the last act I do, because that just also breaks the monotony of my show. So instead of doing ventriloquism, it breaks that monotony up and do a marionette act, then I do something else.
How did you get involved in the Red Skelton Fest and theater? Did you perform there a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, I perform every other year. There was a dear friend of mine, his name is Andy Gross. He's actually a very famous magician in America. Well, he was on tour about 5 years ago, and he asked me if I can be his opening act, because he needed a longer show. So instead of bringing more magic, so he was performing at the Red Skelton Theater, and I was his opening act. And the next year or 2 years later, they needed some more entertainment. He couldn't make it, and they also had a very smaller budget. So I worked for them, and it's worked out great ever since. And I'm so grateful for Andy. Again, association. I hang out with people that are very generous, and Andy's one of those few people that is not jealous. He claps for other people's success. And that's what makes Andy a great guy. So if he's listening, Andy, thank you.
I want to jump in here. Unfortunately, we've run out of time for today's episode.
Aww.
Don't worry. Don't cry. Here. right here. Here's a tissue for you.
Thank you.
We'll continue the conversation with Bob Abdu, Mr. Puppet, in our next episode. I want to remind you, though, that he's going to be a headliner coming up where?
At the World Clown Association Convention in Northbrook, Illinois, March 7th through the 11th of 2022.
He's really, as you can tell, he's very approachable, willing to help people. So I think it'd be worth your while to check him out at the World Clown Association Convention.
And I will be there and looking so forward to actually meeting him in person now, especially after we've been talking to him on our podcast.
Yeah, he's an interesting fellow. But to tease you for the next episode, let's give you a little information about what's coming up in the next episode. He's going to talk about how he acquires some of his puppets. Does he make them? Does he buy them? Does he steal them? I don't know if he goes into that. And he's also a huge fan of the Beatles now.
Yes.
And he's worked that into a gig. So you want to find out how that's going to happen. What else does he talk about, Jazz?
He talks about some of his, how he presents his characters with his voices.
Ah, yeah. The personalities, the material that he comes up with. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So you'll want to tune into our next episode. All right. So we'll wrap this one up, put a nice little bow on it.
Yep.
No, Jazz, you don't have to put the bow on your head. Anyway, thank you for listening to Slapstick Conversations on Clowning. I'm your humble hobo host, Gunky, and this is my lovely co-host, Jazzy.
Yep.
Say goodbye,
Jazzy. We look forward to seeing you, next time.
And just remember, life is a circus. Just don't walk behind those elephants.
For sure.